And welcome to another exciting episode of the SoCal Showdown Podcast, your number one source for everything involving USC and UCLA college football, the greatest rivalry in all of college sports. As always, my name is Joshua Shibata. I'm one of your co-hosts representing the, we'll see how things go in the end, for the USC Trojans of Southern California. And alongside me, as always, my co-host and frenemy for life representing those UCLA Bruins who just took quite a bit of a thrashing recently up in Oregon, Anthony Fletcher. Anthony, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, Josh. We're kind of in that weird part of the year where we're starting to change weather a little bit and everybody's kind of miserable from the allergies and whatnot here, but we're getting by. We're doing all right over here.
Yeah, actually, it is, I would say seasonably, though people may think this is unseasonably, but this is seasonably starting to get colder, especially with that hour change, you know, the daylight savings thing that kind of screws up everybody. It definitely gets a lot colder quicker for us. So, yep, I'm feeling it. But then it's typical LA. I bet you anything, by next week it'll be warm again. We'll probably have a very warm Thanksgiving. We'll probably have a nice warm Christmas and New Year's. Because that is just the way that it is in LA. It never changes weather-wise for us. But I completely understand where you're coming from with the weather. And it's also starting to become flu season, too. That's one of those things that a lot of people are trying to avoid. Like, you know, trying to avoid.
Don't get your shot.
There you go. All right. Well, let's talk about it. USC and UCLA spent some time in Oregon over the weekend. One of us had, an okay day. One of us got trumped pretty badly. Oregon takes down UCLA 42-21. I didn't watch the game at all, Anthony, but that score looks really bad. Was the game as bad as it looked with Chip Kelly returning to Oregon in a pretty bad homecoming?
No, it wasn't as bad as it looked. It was, I would venture to say it was almost entirely self-inflicted for UCLA. Turnovers were definitely the name of the game, and unforced errors, you know. What was even more unfortunate was DTR obviously getting injured again during the game, forcing Wilton State to come back in and play mop-up duty. But he made a pretty good effort. I would definitely, you know, it was a 3-score game obviously doesn't look great. But I would venture to say that UCLA played better than the score indicates. You know, Joshua Kelly continues to be a revelation at running back for us. Did a really great job rushing for 161 yards and a touchdown of the day. And the passing game as a whole was not terrible, you know, between Wilton State and DTR and even a pass on a fake punt by Stephen Flintoff. On the day, UCLA had 297 yards and 2 touchdowns with 1 interception. You know, it was just those untimely errors. And again, the penalties are just, man, it's bizarre. And I don't know if this is just, obviously it's not just, you know, the conference's, you know, lackluster officiating, but, you know, UCLA, it's just the undisciplined play that has been learned over the last several years by this program, and it is getting to the point where it is truly, man, I don't even know how to explain it. It's just so frustrating to see us make a play, especially on offense, just to have it called back on a hold, or have it called back, or have a play negated because of a false start, and have us pushed back, to, you know, 5 yards when it could have been, you know, second and short. You know, those are the sorts of things that we're continuing to see over and over again. And, you know, youth has a lot to do with that, where UCLA is concerned. But, you know, this has also been an ongoing problem, so it's also understandable for a lot of people around the program to be extremely frustrated with how it looks on a weekly basis when we're racking up all these lost yards in penalties. And it's gotten to the point now, you know, I can honestly say this game in particular against Oregon, where it is costing us games, you know. So it's something that got to get short of, you know, and I, I do have some faith in Chip Kelly in terms of him getting the logistics of the game on point. You know, I've expressed my opinion about him in the past, about how, whether or not he was a leader of men, but, you know, we'll see if in the end, my opinion has not changed much in that regard. But what we will see is whether or not that matters, if he's put together a staff that can lead these kids, and he doesn't really have to be the rah-rah guy. But what I do trust him to do is to get these teams disciplined and playing like a well-oiled machine, which we haven't seen a lot of this year. You know, we've seen glimpses of it. You know, obviously, we've improved in a lot of areas where we were piss poor at best last year and the last several years. But, you know, the youth movement, these are things that are going to come with it. It's just, it still continues to be frustrating. So, again, you know, turnovers, penalties, those are the things that really kind of, just really hurt UCLA down the stretch in this game. Total offense-wise, you know, we actually outgained Oregon despite the score. We had 496 yards, so they're 492 on the day. Even the controls, the clock a little bit, and ran more plays, 87 to their 75. You know, which speaks well of the offense, but obviously it's hard to complete drives when you don't have the ball in hand. The defense, you know, played admirably at times. They were obviously on the field too much, but you know, just in terms of how they played against some of the better aspects of the Oregon offense, you know, 264 yards and two touchdowns on the day for Justin Herbert. The All-American candidate quarterback for Oregon. You know, he moved the ball efficiently. He did a good job. The one key thing for him, no interceptions on the day. Did a good job of holding on to the rock. Blake Mamone, their punter, actually had, excuse me, not their punter, but their kicker, I believe, actually had a fake, pass on a fake to their tight end that actually was a real momentum maker for Oregon, which we actually paid some time later on in the game. But, you know, we were able to keep him under 300 yards passing in the game. Justin Herbert just did a good job of moving the offense when they needed him to. As far as their running game is concerned, they did net 200 yards on the day, but on 42 carries. So we were able to keep them from breaking big plays. Down the stretch, obviously, the defense is just tired as can be. And T.J. Vidal actually ended up with 90 yards and a touchdown on 25 carries, only a 3.6-yard average. Tony Brooks James, though, came in, took advantage of a tired UCLA defense, and broke off 73 yards on 5 carries, 54 yards on one of those carries for a touchdown. So that was sort of the great equalizer in this game. So their run game, while not quite consistent, ended up being effective, particularly down the stretch. Among the receivers, Bill Mitchell, you know, we talked about last week how he was an emerging star at the Pac-12, and he showed it this week, 8 catches for 156 yards, 2 touchdowns. Darnay Holmes, much as I like that kid, could not handle Bill Mitchell in this game and was just getting eaten alive on the day. Jacob Breland, their tight end, had 61 yards and 2 catches, including that long catch on the fake play. So, you know, these guys, not a lot of big plays, but just consistency, taking care of the ball. You know, these guys, Oregon showed, you know, why they're considered one of the better teams in the Pac-12. Now, I will say I do like my assessment of them. Coming into that, I don't think this is Chip Kelly's Oregon in terms of overall offense. I think that this is a game that just kind of got away from UCLA down the stretch and was made to look all the more ugly just because of the turnovers and inconsistency on offense and sustaining drives.
All right, and, you know, as much as I don't want to sympathize with anybody associated with UCLA, Anthony, I do have to say I sympathize completely with you about the penalties. What you just described about the frustration when you make a big play just to have all of a sudden it come be called back And instead of having second and short or third and short, you're third and long, second and long. That's what's been plaguing USC since pretty much since forever. So my question for you, Anthony, and you did mention it. It seems to be more of a youth movement at UCLA. How do you solve the penalty issue? What does it take for a team to turn around and not make so many penalties? Is it just purely youth? Is it a disciplinary issue? Do coaches need to take rein about this? What is it that can possibly fix this issue?
You know what? I think really and truly what it comes down to is trusting yourself to be able to make a play. You know, so many of these plays, you know, you see offensive linemen try to cheat back because, you know, to counter a pass rush, and that leads to false starts,
mm-hmm.
or not trusting the snap count. Or you see defensive linemen who don't trust their eyes and snapping the ball, and that leads to offside penalties. Mm-hmm. Or you see defensive backs getting too physical with receivers down the field because they don't trust themselves to be able to cover, and that
right.
leads to offensive, you know, so I think it comes with reps, it comes with repetition, it comes with practice, and it comes with, you know, trusting yourself to make a big play, you know? I'll tell you what, I'm going to commit the cardinal sin that I always do. I'm going to vote Alabama once again. You know, because I got a chance to watch them against LSU this week,
uh-huh.
you know, another top five team who they completely shut out. And, you know, I'm kind of taken aback because these guys play so physical, but you watch them down in and down out. Now, the SEC is probably a little looser in terms of how they let their guys play. You know, there's some targeting. There's some times when they should be calling targeting, and they're not. You know, stuff like that. But I will give them this. They play so well within themselves and within the room, and you can completely see that these guys trust themselves and trust their ability to make a play without doing the extra. You know, you don't see guys getting thrown out of bounds because all they're worried about is making a tackle. You know, you don't see guys whiffing on tackles because all they're worried about is taking the guy down the ground, not making the big hit.
Right.
You know, so the thing to keep in mind about those teams, you know, Nick Saban aside, you know, even though we see Alabama sending, you know, guys to the league every year, that's a very senior laden team, you know. That's a team that has a lot of senior leadership, a lot of upperclassmen leadership, and those are the teams that you see committing less penalties because those teams know how to play within themselves. So, you know, it's an unfortunate thing to see teams like UCLA and USC and teams all around the Pac-12 where, one, the officiating has just been—it's been a joke.
Right.
It's become a national joke. It's come to the point where they're talking about it in venues like ESPN. And Fox Sports, and they're acknowledging how bad it is right now. You know, so we're not crazy. but the officiating side, you know, this is a young conference. These are young teams. You know, USC and UCLA are both extremely young teams. UCLA in itself is the third youngest team in the country.
Right.
You know, so I will say that the penalties aren't always a surprise, but they continue to be frustrating because they always seem to come at the least opportune time. You know, but that's usually the case because if you break a big run, you know, the fact is probably somebody held. You know, so it's a matter of some of these guys being savvy enough to not get caught sometimes as well. Because on any given play, I'm certain you can call holding. I see holding every stinking down as a defensive lineman. So, you know, I think that this is just something that's going to come with experience and practice and reps.
All right. Well, going from one side of Oregon to the other, USC took on Oregon State and fared better. USC defeated Oregon State 38-21. This marked the beginning of the coaching change. No longer is T. Martin calling the offensive play calling. It was purely under head coach Clay Helton. And, of course, we didn't have Callaway no longer as the offensive line coach. The offensive line coach was changed. So what difference did that make for USC? Obviously, USC won, so that's a good thing. But, unfortunately, it's against a team like Oregon State. Oregon State is the worst defensive team in the Pac-12. and in the entire nation. Literally, it is the second worst defensive overall defensive team in the entire country. So dropping 38 points on Oregon State is not necessarily anything to brag about. Granted, USC's offense did look a lot smoother. There was a lot of talk from the players after the game that Clay Helton tends to focus a lot more on up-tempo. And even head coach Helton said afterwards in interviews that that is what his focus is on. It's a lot more up-tempo, calling the plays real quick, not so much looking at the side of the field, but really getting your plays out there to make sure that the team is ready to go. So maybe that upbeat tempo allowed USC to move a little bit smoother, make less mistakes. There, of course, were still penalties. But, you know, USC's offense started to really, really hum, especially the run game. The run game was amazing. Asa Cedric Ware had a season in career high, 17 carries for 205 yards. That's 12.1 yards per average, 3 touchdowns. Again, this is Oregon State, worst defense in the country. So, you know, you take that with a grain of salt. But also, Vaivai Malapai, 15 carries, 101 yards himself. Stephen Carr also got in on the action. Only 6 carries, but 49 yards, but a touchdown. Unfortunately, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, Carr did suffer a high ankle sprain during the game. And by all accounts, he is going to be done for the season. There's only a couple games left anyways. And then if USC makes it to the Pac-12 championship game, and of course they'll probably go to a bowl game, but Carr, for all intents and purposes, is done for the season, which is a shame. But 332 total yards on the ground for USC. USC, JT Daniels, back at quarterback, didn't do a lot of work just because the run game was doing so well. 14 for 26, 177 yards and a touchdown, but the emergence of true freshman wide receiver Devon Williams, 6'4", 196 pounds, kind of buried on the depth chart, but he was a kid that coming into USC, very highly touted. Again, most recruits coming into USC are very highly touted, but there's a lot of people wanting to see a lot of Devon Williams, especially after he impressed a lot during the spring. But of course, because our wide receiving core is so stacked, Devon Williams was kind of the low man on the totem pole. Unfortunately, another injury. Michael Pittman, who has been our star wide receiver, had a huge hit during the beginning of the game. He had to leave because it basically it separated his shoulder. He's already having AC joint shoulder injuries that he's been dealing with. This one kind of really knocked it loose. He will not play this weekend against Cal, but head coach Clay Helton is hoping that Pittman will be back for UCLA the following week. We'll see. But Devon Williams took advantage of that opportunity. 3 receptions, 77 yards, including his first career USC touchdown, 25.7 yards per average on each reception. He was phenomenal, top receiver of the game. Tyler Vaughn's 3 receptions, 41 yards. And of course, Amon-Ra St. Brown, 5 receptions for 39 yards. Again, not a lot of offense through the air just because their run game was doing well, but not too bad. For our offense, which wasn't producing at all in our horrible losses to Utah and Arizona State. Now, on the other side, our defense, which has kind of been our stalwart, looked really, really sluggish against Cal, especially considering the fact, even though the score was 38-21, it was only 21-14 at halftime. We were only up 1 touchdown against one of the worst teams in the country defensively and in the Pac-12, which really got a lot of people scared at halftime because there is a lot of talk. I was on the message boards and looking at a lot of USC fan sites and a lot of rumblings that this might be USC this season especially has not been very good at maintaining leads during games, and there's a lot of fear that this game would be no different. And it was close. It was close against Oregon State. Fortunately, near the end, especially with Asa Cedric Ware's last touchdown run, kind of opened up the game for us. But, you know, again, a win's kind of a win. It's just unfortunate that our defense, which is usually really, really good, and they did rack up 6 sacks in the game, which is great. Isaiah Langley, who's been kind of our you know, our guy that's getting beaten up at the cornerback position actually did pretty well. 9 tackles. He led the team of the day. Christian Rector and J2Fele, though, man, they were beasts. Christian Rector had 2.5 sacks, 3.5 tackle for losses. J2Fele had 2 sacks of his own, 2 tackles for losses. Those guys were just amazing. But again, Oregon State, they've been giving up the most sacks in the entire country. So you take a lot of the things that USC did with this game with a grain of salt. They did do the things they were supposed to do, but just the fact that the game was a little bit closer than it should have been kind of makes you wonder how things are going to turn out when they have to go against a team like Cal, who now has one of the best defenses in the country, and then, of course, against a very, very game UCLA, as much as I hate to admit it, and then, of course, against Notre Dame, which is one of the best teams in the country right now. So, you know, again, it's a good win for USC, a win that is much needed, but still there's a lot of shakiness going on, and with some of the injuries that are resulting from that game, like I said, Michael Pittman's going to be out, Stephen Carr is no longer going to be in there, even though Ware and Vivi Malapaya have been the real big running backs of the team. It's nice to have that change of pace back with Carr. I'm going to reveal later on that we do have some injuries again at the cornerback position, which already our secondary is so thin right now. There might be some issues for USC going on into these last three games of the season. But again, USC holds on for the win, 38-21 to beat Oregon State.
Outstanding. So, question then.
Sure.
What's your level of faith right now, having watched this game with Helton calling the plays on offense? Did you see enough to have some increase your faith?
You know, again, it's kind of an incomplete. I can't, because this is going against a team like Oregon State. You know, again, worst defense in the country. What USC did is what they were supposed to do. So, I mean, I'm glad that it did turn out the way it was supposed to, but it's not anything. You can't say just because of this game that all of a sudden USC's offensive woes are completely solved. You know, this was like not the game. If you were in Clay Helton's position, if you had to choose a game on the season to take control of the team and kind of give yourself that first big push, this was the game to do it. You know, I mean, you look at the season and go, all right, I want to make sure when I take over, I'm going against the worst defense in the country. So let me start with this game, you know. I think there'll be a lot more to take into account and a lot more assessment once we play Cal. Again, Cal, one of the best defenses in the country, one of the best defenses in the Pac-12. I think that's going to be the real litmus test to see how much faith we can have in Helton calling the plays. I think that game, of course, UCLA, and then we'll see what happens with Notre Dame. But yeah, I can't in all good faith say anything about Clay Helton's play calling ability against a team like Oregon State.
Okay. One other question about the offense. Now, obviously, USC ran the ball extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, JP Daniels, his numbers were fairly pedestrian this week again, the worst defense in the country.
Yep.
Do you perceive of any quarterback controversy going forward with the way Jack Sears played the week before?
You know, there's a lot of talk about that right now, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens, I think, more postseason. I think right now, you know, when Jack Sears was given the chance to play with JT Daniels suffering the concussion protocol, Matt Fink being out with broken ribs, during practice, there was still chance that JT Daniels was going to be able to pass the concussion protocol and play against Arizona State. And the way the coaches were treating Jack Sears, from the way the reports were going on, is that they kind of treated Sears like, well, you're not going to be the starter. You're doing it for practice, but JT will be back. So right there, it's very, and maybe, I mean, you know, again, I'm not a coach, never coached, not planning on coaching. Maybe, especially that late in the season, we already know who's going to be the guy for at least the next couple of years is going to be JT Daniels. You know, maybe that's how the coaches wanted to treat it, because, you know, why bother switching to Jack Sears when you know who the man's going to be? And again, there was a slight chance that JT could have played, you know? But then, of course, when Jack Sears did come in, he had a rough start, but he picked up and, man, he really, really impressed a lot. You know, that game, by no accounts was he supposed to do as good as he did, but he did. He did very well. And as I've been mentioning before, the USC offense, the way that it's supposed to be designed, it really favors more of a mobile quarterback, which JT Daniels is not at all. So, kind of not surprising that Jack Sears looked a lot better in that offense than JT did. So, with that being said, it will be interesting to see what will happen after the season. Because, again, unless JT completely sucks, which I really kind of don't see that happening unless it's against the Notre Dame team. Like, Notre Dame, I can completely see him just really having a horrible game. But against Cal, you know, I don't think you'll have a horrible game. I don't think you'll have an amazing game, but I don't think anything that will make Coach Helton bench him, unless he's like throwing like five picks in the first half, which, you know, is possible. When we preview the team, the Cal secondary is really, really good. And then against UCLA, again, you guys are on an upswing. It's a rivalry game. There's all, by all counts, you guys can play JT really, really rough. But I feel there's a very long leash on JT. They'll let him do a lot, and he has to really, really suck before they even think about putting Sears in. So because of that, and because JT's going to be the man, I just don't think Sears will be around after this season. I think he will pack it up, go somewhere else, because there's no reason for him to stay, unless Fink somehow gets pushed out, but I don't think Fink wants to go anywhere. Because he knows he can't do any better. So I don't think there could be a QB controversy unless JT completely sucks. Which, it's by all accounts, he could. True freshman, super freshman. He's been having those moments lately where he's, you know, he's really been making bad decisions like any freshman would, but he kind of counters that. For every bad decision he makes a very amazing Sam Darnold-esque play. You know, when he was playing even in this game, he dropped some balls right in the hands of receivers. Some of them were drops too, but I mean, just you just watch him and you could see the potential in JT. You could so see the potential in him. It's just you forget that he is supposed to technically be still in high school. This is a completely different game. And again, I think too many people, and myself included, kind of forget that he's not Sam Darnold. And we're kind of expecting Sam Darnold-like amazing feats from this kid when, again, it's a different situation. Sam Darnold was a redshirt sophomore when he got the chance to start. JT is a super freshman. He's technically a senior in high school. So, you know, it's we forget these things, and so you kind of can't really put that same expectancy on him. So I just don't see there being a quarterback controversy unless he completely sucks and Helton is so stubborn and saying, no, we're never going to let Sears come in unless JT, like, gets really hurt. You know, then there might be some people screaming and controversy going, let's get Sears in, you know, but yeah, I just don't see it. So, but you never know. We still got a few more games left, and that's what we're going through right now. So, next weekend, Anthony, a lot of important games because there's still a lot of movement going on in the top of the Pac-12 North and the top of the Pac-12 South. Let's preview the North real quick. Right now, sitting at the top spot, and also, again, the highest-ranked Pac-12 team, with the closest possibility, if any, of getting into the playoffs. But again, there, a lot of things have to happen for that to happen. But Washington State, 5-1 in conference competition, number 8 ranked in the playoff ranking system. Right behind them is Washington, who's 5-2. They're on a bye. Technically, Washington and Washington State are technically tied. Washington has one more game than Washington State. Washington State will be at Colorado this Saturday, 12 p.m. on ESPN. If Washington State loses, then they'll be tied with Washington, and that makes the season-ending rivalry game between Washington and Washington State, possibly for the Pac-12 North. Really, none of the other teams, Stanford included, are in any contention, but you never know. There's a lot of people that would love to play spoilers in this, but Washington State and Washington, they're the ones to watch out for the Pac-12 North. While over in the Pac-12 South, there's right now currently a three-way tie. Technically a four-way if you count Arizona State. Utah, USC, and Arizona are all together at four wins with three losses. Arizona State has one less game. They're at 3-3. So Arizona State plays against UCLA. UCLA will go over to Arizona State 11 a.m. This Saturday. I don't see a channel for that game, so I think it's a...
We'll be on the Pac-12 Network.
Okay, so that's what I was going to say. It's probably going to either be the Pac-12 or possibly FS1. That's usually what happens when they're like fighting to see which where the game ends up. But if it's on the Pac-12, good luck finding it again. Try to find your online streaming services, Sling TV. Good offer right there to possibly see the game. They have the Pac-12 Network. But UCLA at ASU, very important game for obviously for UCLA, but obviously for USC. ASU, if ASU ties with USC, and they have to beat UCLA to do that, they have the important tiebreaker because ASU did beat USC. So USC needs... UCLA, sadly, we need UCLA to beat ASU to prevent that from happening, all right? Now, with that being said, there's still two other teams that are tied with USC, Arizona and Utah. Now, Arizona does not have the tiebreaker because USC beat Arizona, so we don't have to worry too much about them. But Utah also has the tiebreaker with USC because Utah trumped USC earlier in the season. Utah will be playing Oregon. 2:30 p.m. on the Pac-12 Network. That's going to be a very important game and possibly a game where Utah could lose because Oregon is looking really, really good. Utah's looking a little shaky. So that's going to be another important game for USC fans to watch because if Utah beats Oregon, Utah really only has Colorado left on their season interconference season. And Colorado is not exactly looking so good right now. So, you know, USC's chances to see Utah lose is against Oregon. So we need Oregon to beat Utah. Other games that are being played, Oregon State going in Stanford at 6 p.m. And then, of course, our game coming up, Cal at the Coliseum, 7:30 p.m. on ESPN. Obviously, SC needs to win that game to have any chance of still remaining in contention. So, with that being all said, everything is now set. Let's talk about these games. So, Anthony, UCLA takes the trip over to Arizona to play Arizona State, 11 a.m., as we mentioned before, on the Pac-12 Network. Now, despite the fact that nobody's going to see this game, Anthony, ASU has been playing, you know, pretty well. I mean, they're hit or miss, you know, inconsistent here and there. They did beat USC. Granted, USC had Jack Sears starting, a third-string quarterback. We were missing a few certain pieces of our defense, but they still played a very, very good game. And, I mean, God, they have a pretty damn impressive running back as well. So, what is UCLA going to do when they go over to Arizona to try to play spoiler in the Pac-12 South race?
Well, that's a great question. Yeah, I don't like this game. I'll just say that from the outset. I don't like this game for UCLA. You know, you're sort of tempted to call Arizona State a middle of the pack, you know, no pun intended, Pac-12 team. But... is it really not? I mean, everybody's got such a similar record.
Yep.
I don't know what middle of the pack is right now.
Yeah.
You know, everything is kind of middle of the pack. But I do know that this is a team that plays well on offense. And the reason I don't like the Saints in UCLA is I the way you hate playing mobile quarterback, I hate playing experienced quarterback. And Manny Wilkins, I like Manny Wilkins more than you do, I'll say that much.
Yeah, I'm not impressed with him, but okay.
Yeah, I like him. I think he's a quality quarterback. On the season, he's thrown for over 2,500 yards, 15 touchdowns, only 3 interceptions on the season, which I think is the key number. That's the key number for any experienced quarterback is how well are they protecting the ball. And Manny Wilkins does that extremely well while still being productive, throwing the ball through the air. You know, this guy will end up being a 3,000-yard passer on the season by the time the season's over. And that's while playing, you know, with one of the better running backs in the country, let alone the Pac-12 right now, in Eno Benjamin.
Yeah.
But obviously, USC fan, know firsthand how good he is.
So hard to tackle that guy.
He is. He's not a big guy. He's only about 5'10", 200 pounds. You know, he runs around his pad, plays with good power. He's extremely quick, you know. Does a great job of making decisions and getting downhill quickly. This is a guy who was an Army All-American guy. He's one of the better recruits for Arizona coming into the last season, this year being his sophomore season. You know, so he's a good young player for them, and he plays behind a really good offensive line for Arizona State, which also helps keep Manny Wilkins upright. So, you know, even if you're not impressed with Manny Wilkins, Manny Wilkins is a seasoned vet who knows what he's doing out there on the field, which he's definitely shown. And, you know, he's got also, you know, besides having one of the better running backs in the country, he's probably got maybe one of the best receivers in the country. And a guy who's probably going to vie for being the first receiver taken in the draft coming after this season, in N'Keal Harry, who's just a stud, you know. He's got 55 catches for 828 yards on the season with 9 touchdowns. Certainly among the top tier receivers in the Pac-12 right now. Just a physical specimen, a really impressive kid who's going to vie for a lot of honors at the postseason. He's by far, by nearly, 500 yards, their leading receiver on the season. So, you know, the offense really runs through those three guys. You know, Manny Wilkins being the chalk that helps it all run smoothly. So, when you have a defense that's struggled in some areas, you know, especially a defense that is, you know, kind of lacking in stature on the outside at the corners, playing against a 6'4", you know, athlete like N'Keal Harry, you know, and then also a defense that has at times struggled, you know, stopping the run at times, especially late in the game, you know, this spells a lot of trouble for UCLA. Defensively, you know, this is a team that really only gives up less than 23 points a game. You know, they play solid defense. Again, USC knows that this is a team that's capable of playing solid defense, but they have given up yards at times. But they do have some definite pieces on the defensive side of the ball. They're actually led on defense by Jalen Harvey with 66 tackles and 3.5 tackles for loss. And he was their senior safety, and he's been doing a great job for them so far this season. And again, you know, oftentimes you look at a defense where the safeties are leading the team in tackles, and immediately what comes to mind is that, you know, teams are getting to the second level and are not getting stopped by the front seven. But in this case, Jalen Harvey played a lot like a Darius Pickett in terms of getting close to the line and playing downhill, and he's done a great job of making tackles, as attested to by his 3.5 tackles for loss. And linebackers, they're actually led by a young freshman by the name of Merlin Robertson. He's played extremely well this season. He's second on the team with 59 tackles, has 8 tackles for loss, and 5 sacks, and 1 interception. He's a great young player and a guy to watch in coming seasons for this team. Darian Butler, another guy who does a great job for them defensively. This is a team that definitely has some pieces on defense. They fly around to the ball. This is kind of a typical Arizona State defense. Herman obviously has been playing extremely hard. He's a defensive guy going back to his time in the league, so this is a defense that's kind of up and coming, and he's going to have them showing up, especially at this point in the season, and playing with some extremely young players. So I think that's going to be an interesting matchup. Again, we'll have a lot to do with who's running the game at quarterback for us this week. I have not as of yet heard the status of DTR. I don't know what would be the case with him. I do know that he injured that shoulder. There was some talk of him possibly being ready to go by this Saturday. But who knows? It may be Golden State. But again, I think it's one of these things where, the offense can run well moving the ball so long as that offensive line is getting off and helping Joshua Kelly gain yardage. He's been the key to the offense down the stretch for us, and I think that continues to be the case. It'll be really interesting to see how much success we can have against this defense. I have a lot of faith in him being able to do so. But again, we will see. It's hard to call it a trap game. obviously, this is Arizona State's the better team in terms of their success on the field so far and their overall record. But I think that this is a team that we can expect to go out and compete with and win. You look at the sum of the pieces, I think they're greater than just their pieces, and I really like what they bring to the table offensively. I think this is a team we can compete with. We'll see.
Well, come on. I want to. Where's that UCLA spirit? I need some of that UCLA spirit, Anthony.
We're two and seven.
We need you guys to beat ASU. I don't want to hear any of this. Oh, I don't know. They look better than us. Where is that?
First of all, I do say that. First of all, I said on paper you can make a case. But I will also say this. As soon as you told me that USC needs UCLA to beat Arizona State, I was like, this is one of the few times I've considered throwing a game.
such a dick. To be honest, my question to you is this, Anthony. So, it sounds to me like it really doesn't matter now, or at least at this point in the season, who your quarterback is, as long as Kelly is running the ball well. Is this now becoming kind of a run-dominated offense for UCLA because of the way the quarterback situation has kind of turned out?
I think it has less to do with quarterback performance and more just to do with how well Joshua Kelly has run the ball.
Okay.
I think you ask any offense around the country, sans Texas Tech and Washington State.
Right.
The first thing you want to do is establish the run and run the ball well.
Right.
Because, everything runs through that. That allows you to get teams out of put teams down in the box and teams will bring down safety. Arizona State does that naturally already with Jalen Harvey.
Right.
And it takes another guy out of coverage when you establish the run. It allows for more one-on-one matchups on the outside. So that will create success for you in the passing game. So, I think right now, I think Kelly loves that we're being able to run the ball. And it bodes well for us, even looking forward into next season, because teams have to be aware that is what UCLA does well.
Mm-hmm.
They have an established star at running back. And it'll allow your young quarterback to see things differently, just in terms of what coverages they'll get and what matchups they'll see on the outside. So, in terms of identity, I don't mind that for us. I think we want that tough guy, run it down your throat mentality. Even though that's not exactly how we execute. Josh Kelly, he's a tough kid, but he's more of a slasher. He's got great vision, finds the hole. And he gets downhill very quickly. He's got great speed, but that's the identity that we want to establish, that we will run it down your throat. This offense will come off the line and punch you in the mouth.
Got it. Well, to be honest, I would love for SC to have that identity. I think that's the identity that USC should be focusing on, not this balanced identity, which really means nothing right now for USC. Right. But I agree with you on that, Anthony. Well, moving on now to the USC game. Cal takes a visit to the Coliseum, and it's homecoming for USC fans, if there's any USC fans left that are willing to go to see this game. 7:30 p.m. on ESPN. Again, this is a must-win game for USC if USC has any hopes of being in the Pac-12 South contention. Now, this is year number two under head coach Justin Wilcox over in Cal. For those of you USC fans, Justin Wilcox is a familiar name because he was the former defensive coordinator for USC before being kind of kicked out by head coach Clay Helton. Since taking over for Cal, Cal's been kind of inconsistent. Last year, they had a pretty good offense. Last year, they had a really bad offense. They were 11th in the Pac-12 in total offense. This year, they're still pretty bad at offense. But the thing is, it's kind of a weird circumstance for Cal. Cal started the year with a starting quarterback, Ross Bowers, who wasn't exactly super great last year. He threw a lot of interceptions, 12 of them. He only had a 59% passing completion rating. But he was the incumbent quarterback. He had the most experience. Competing with him was two quarterbacks coming into spring, including Chase Gabbers, who came back. He's now a sophomore with Cal. And then the transfer from South Carolina, Brandon McEwen. Okay. Now, here's the thing. Ross Bowers played just the first half of the very first game of the season for Cal, and he was unceremoniously benched. Rumor has it that Bowers was benched not because of any skill set or anything, but because he might have an injury to his throwing hand that the Cal coaches, unlike USC, and I think, Anthony, UCLA sometimes divulges injuries. I'm thinking now with Chip Kelly, maybe they don't do that anymore, because I remember Chip Kelly's not a big injury revealing.
He's very secretive about that.
Yeah. So Cal is very much the same thing. So Cal has made it a policy under just Wilcox that unless the injury is season ending, they are not revealing anything. But there's a lot of rumor that Bowers, who has not seen any game time since that first half of the very first game, is dealing with a broken hand. So that's why he's not playing. In the meantime, it's been a toss-up between Garbers and McEwen, and Cal has pretty much been having them both playing at the same time. This has made the offense very, very inconsistent. As USC fans, you remember USC has had certain instances where we've had two quarterbacks competing and playing at the same time, and it never bodes very well, especially when it comes to Brandon McEwen. Brandon McEwen has had 8 interceptions this season and 5 fumble losses. He is a turnover machine. And yet, for whatever reason, Justin Wilcox constantly puts him in for a lot of special circumstance situations, close red zone offense, and third down offensive play calls, because Brandon McEwen is a mobile quarterback. So far on the season, he has rushed 372 yards and 4 rushing touchdowns, including 123 yards rushing against Oregon. He's the very first quarterback for Cal to do that since 1953. But again, he makes a lot of turnovers. In the last game when they played against Washington State, Chase Garbers got the offense onto like the 2 or 3 yard line. Brandon McEwen was put into the game and he lost the ball, and the Washington State offense recovered. So, you know, it's been very frustrating for Cal fans of why Brandon McEwen has constantly been put into the game. It wasn't until recently that Chase Garbers has pretty much won the starting position as quarterback. But again, Brandon McEwen is constantly thrown out there for, again, red zone offense and weird special situation offensive plays. But Garbers, you know, hasn't been exactly anything special either. He's 1,007 yards passing, 10 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. He's a little mobile, just not as mobile as McEwen. 51 rushing attempts, 231 yards total. But the offense has definitely not clicked. They have not had an offensive touchdown since 3 games ago when they played Oregon State. Since then, even their win, their big upset win over Washington, who was ranked number 15 at the time, they won because their defense score 2 pick sixes against Washington. Other than that, they have not scored any offensive touchdowns in the last 2 games. So the offense is definitely not exactly humming as, you know, a Cal fan would want. They also have returning for them their star running back, Patrick Laird. He's a senior, 6 feet, 205 pounds. Last season, Laird ran for 1,000 yards. This year, might miss the mark. He's had kind of a subpar season. He's only ran for 700 yards, 5 rushing touchdowns. But he is also a pass catcher as well. He's had 33 receptions, 213 yards, 3 receiving touchdowns. So it is something for USC to watch out for because Patrick Laird can catch. They also have another running back in Marcel Dancy. He's a junior. He's really not been much of a factor. It's pretty much been Patrick Laird or, again, Brandon McEwen. If he's in there, he will run with the ball. Now, on the receiving side, they have a couple of very talented wide receivers. Vic Wharton is the guy right now, senior, 5'11", 190 yards. He has 40 receptions. That's twice as much as pretty much anyone else on the team. 394 yards receiving. Oddly enough, he does not have any touchdowns. The touchdown guy is Kanawaya Noah. He's a junior, 6 feet, 185 yards, 28 receptions, 326 yards, 2 touchdowns. And he's a guy that USC fans should remember because when USC played Cal last year, Noah was the guy. He had 110 receiving yards and 2 touchdowns against USC. So, with that being said, the offense, I'm not completely worried too much, though our secondary is a little bit in shambles right now. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Right now, it's been reported that our star cornerback, Biggie Iman Marshall, is hurt. He does have a neck injury. No word if he will play. It's kind of a 50-50 decision. We'll probably find out maybe Friday, maybe game time. But if Iman does not play, man, that is going to be rough for our secondary, which is already pretty much depleted. Isaiah Langley is our kind of our only cornerback left. Greg Johnson, our true freshman, he won't be playing. He's hurt. Elijah Griffin, one of our other true freshmen, he is coming back from an ankle injury. There's no guarantee he will play. So right now, that leaves Jonathan Lockett, who's kind of been moved from the nickel position into cornerback. Dominic Davis, he's a name that a lot of USC fans might remember. He started as a running back, was moved over to the cornerback position, rarely ever used. He's being put now into play because of the lack of depth. Ajene Harris, who's our star nickel position, has been moved to safety because our safety position is also really, really thin. C.J. Pollard and Captain Marvell Taylor are our only safeties there. We lost Talanoa Hufanga for the season because of a broken collarbone. And Isaiah Polamoa, we lost way back when we played this against Stanford with a dislocated shoulder. So we are really hurting at our secondary. So, you know, this might be a chance for Cal's offense to kind of click. We'll see. Now, on the other side of the ball, unlike Oregon State, Cal is one of the best defenses in the nation. They are top 10 in the nation. They are number 1 or number 2, depending on which stats you look at, in the Pac-12. Like I said, they've kind of been helping Cal win games. The secondary has been phenomenal. They have, amongst the 4 starting secondary members, they have 9 interceptions amongst all 4 of them. Trayvon Beck, Jalen Hawkins, Ashton Davis, and Cameron Bynum. Those are their cornerbacks and safety. 9 interceptions amongst all 4 guys. 2 of them 4 pick sixes. So definitely something that JT Daniels has to watch out for because he's such a young quarterback. It's very easy for him to throw some very errant balls, so, you know, we're going to have to watch out for that. Also got to watch out for Ashton Davis. He's the safety. He's been a star for the team. 39 tackles. He leads that secondary in tackles. He also kind of plays up close to the line of scrimmage, so that's why he accounts for a lot of tackles. Now, for their linebackers, man, their linebackers are pretty good too. Evan Weaver, who's a junior linebacker, 6'3", 235 pounds. And Jordan Kunazic, senior, 6'3", 235 pounds. Jordan leads the team with 99 tackles and 4 sacks. Evan Weaver, 94 tackles, 1.5 sacks, and 2 interceptions of his own. So there's a reason why Cal's defense is really good. They have a lot of great playmakers. Thing is, too, though, they don't really get a lot of sacks. They only have 19 sacks for the season. Seven of those sacks came against one team in particular. Surprise, surprise, Oregon State. So that number is a little skewed as well. They do give up quite a few sacks. They've given up 25 sacks for the season. So there is a possibility that USC's pass rushing and our defensive line, which has been playing really, really well lately, could make some noise. So with that all being said, you know, this is going to be a very, very interesting game. Cal, like I said, Cal can pick apart our struggling secondary if they really need to. I'm not too worried about the run game because even last year, we Laird was having a better season last year and we limited him to only 82 yards on 15 carries, 5.5 yards per carry. So I'm not too worried. Our run defense has been pretty good. Our secondary has just been like crap. So this could be a high offensive game. You know, I want to be positive about it, and we'll see. Like you asked before, Anthony, is this, what do I have confidence in Coach Helton's play calling? This is probably going to be the game we'll decide all that, because this is going to be a game that's going to be primarily offense, and if Clay Helton can get that offense humming, and if our defense can, you know, kind of stack things up despite injuries, you know, otherwise this is going to be a really, really close game. And again, it's a must-win game for USC. But I'm going to be a USC supporter. I'm going to say we're going to win. But I wouldn't be surprised if we win by maybe 3 points by field goal. That's a possibility. But that's our game.
All right, man. Well, yeah, it's hard to believe, again, we're at this point in the season. I'm looking at records right now. I'm realizing everybody's got 9 games under their belt. Mm-hmm. 9 games already. It seems like, honestly, we just started. I know we say it every week, but it really and truly feels like we just started the season.
Oh, yeah. No, I was just talking to a friend, and she was wondering, when is the UCLA and Notre Dame game? And I was like, God damn, that's UCLA's next week, and Notre Dame's the week after. I mean, it really is pretty much the end of the season. Yes, you know? Yeah. So it really, this season did go by really fast. But again, Anthony, it's fun, even though, you know, the Pac-12 South is the, I mean, come on, your top teams in the Pac-12 South all have 3 losses. That's really inexcusable. That's, again, it's the worst division in the entire country, you know.
I'm not willing to say that. Listen, we go through this every year, and I think everybody kind of knows it going into the season. The Pac-12 is going to cannibalize
it. Yeah, it really is.
And it's been so emphasized by the South this year.
Yep.
And again, you know, there's some very middling teams and there's some young teams in the Pac-12 South. I would say, you know, they're a worse division.
I don't
know. At least divisions have less potential.
I was going to say, Anthony, I think the real litmus test is, as much as I used to be very proud that the Pac-12 was the only conference in the Big Five conferences that had a 9-game interconference schedule, I'm starting to think it's not beneficial anymore. I don't think there's anything to gain from the Pac-12 except that it's just pride. That we could say we do it. I think if we do change to an 8-game interconference schedule, like everybody else does, I think that will really show, you know, whether or not we really are cannibalizing. I mean, we are cannibalizing ourselves. But whether, you know, the Pac-12 South is really that bad. You know, because maybe everyone benefits from one extra win. And, you know, a 4-3 record, I'm sorry, a 5-3 record looks a lot better than a 4-3. It's just 1-game difference, but man,
sure,
it looks a lot better, right? I mean, it's one different win, but it looks better.
It really does.
So,
But I also think, you know, there was a lot of coaching changes across the Pac-12.
Oh, yeah. Yep, yep.
You know, and guys like Herm Edwards and Chip Kelly and Kevin Sumlin, you know, they're going to need time. And, you know, I know what you're saying about the way our schedules are structured. I don't know if the rest of the country will take the Pac-12 seriously without that under our belt right now. Mm. You know, it's sort of like the Big 12, you know, needing to play, you know, having a straight-up champion.
Yeah.
I mean, certain conferences need that edge. Right now, unfortunately, the SEC is going to get the edge in every regard. It kind of doesn't matter how well most of the conference plays.
Right.
They're going to get the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, yeah. So, oh, yeah. Especially when you look at the SEC, it's really, I mean, granted, I should be talking, because back in the day, the Pac-10 or the Pac-12 or the Pac-10 was really just USC and everybody else. But the SEC is the same way. It's really just Alabama, you know, maybe LSU, maybe, you know, one other team, and that's it, you know? So, yeah, you're absolutely right. You'll forget that there's a bunch of other teams. There's 10 or 11 other teams. And most of them are, they're crap, you know? But they do get the benefit of the doubt because they are the SEC. You're absolutely right about that. So, I don't know, though.
Before
but,
we go.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Before we go.
Sure.
Before we go, you know, having to shit on our conference. Yeah, I was encouraged by something I saw earlier. I'm going to mention it in just a second.
Sure.
But I thought I'd give you an opportunity to say something you're encouraged about your squad.
Okay.
You know, at this point in the season, like where are you at mentally on your with your team?
Oh, okay.
What's bright for the future?
Sure, sure. You know, like I mentioned about JT Daniels, I think that is the bright spot of our future. JT is a great quarterback. He has the potential to be a great quarterback. There are things that JT does right now that's, you know, very reminiscent of what Sam Darnold did. You know, he'll make these just beautiful, beautiful plays, just dropping the ball perfectly. And you hear the commentators and everyone just say, no freshman or senior in high school should be able to do what he does. You know, it's just, you know, it's just, again, he's technically supposed to be a senior in high school. He's playing a completely different game, and it shows. It shows that it is a different game, and it's hard, you know. And again, you also forget he really has only had like a month of preparation. Yeah, I mean, that's hard for anybody to do. So regardless of the fact that he's not exactly blowing people away with stats, his stats are very subpar with a lot of the games decisions that he makes, the things that he does right really gives me a lot of confidence that you put this year under his belt, and the way he handles himself, you see him in the media, he acknowledges the mistakes he makes, but he doesn't let that bother him. You know, he definitely looks like a pro. He looks like a leader, you know. He definitely looks like a guy that can handle being the future leader centerpiece of a team like USC. So, I feel really good. And our defense, a lot of the freshman players coming in, Paloa Ie Nauteote, Talanoa Hufanga, just a lot of the players coming in, they look good. It's just unfortunate that a lot of them have been getting hurt. There's been a lot of injuries. But, man, there's some kids that there's a bright future ahead for a lot of them, you know? So, yeah, I mean, there's some good stuff. There's some, like, you talk about your team a lot, being young, third youngest team in the country, but you walk away from this season, regardless of what the stats are, and you feel confident because you know next year you guys are going to be, there's nothing to do but be better, right? So,
right. Absolutely.
I feel very similar with that with certain players of our team. And the beauty is they're players that are in very, very important positions. You know, quarterback, our defense. So very important positions. So I'm happy about that. So yeah, that's a bright side to look at, you know, right now for our team. So, but hey, I like that ending for our podcast.
Absolutely.
I like that ending.
See,
for our
I'll just put mine in real quick.
Sure.
Again, I was looking at schedules just a minute ago, and what I had realized, you know, we came into the season, and you said I knew they had a tough schedule, you know, but I talked about the rankings of some of the things that we were facing early in the season, most pointedly Cincinnati. But what I had to realize is our non-conference schedule has a combined record right now of 24-3.
Wow.
Each of the teams that we played are non-conference. Fresno State, Oklahoma, and Cincinnati are all 8-1 at this point in the season, which to me is extremely encouraging. Not only from the standpoint of, you know, of making it look not quite so bad, the season's not so badly, but it's really encouraging to know that this is going to be a seasoned team going into the offseason, a team that has faced tough competition and is young and still growing and will be ready to compete next year. So, you know, again, we talk about it all the time. You know, I don't give a lot of, you know, credit to star rankings or you know, to name recognition. You know, every year, some team, their time is going to come.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And you look at Fresno State, you look at Cincinnati, Oklahoma's kind of a given with their talent level. But, you know, teams like that, to be sitting at 8-1 right now and either on the cusp of being ranked or solidly in the top 25, you know, every year it happens for some teams. And we're seeing a lot of teams, you know, come out of the group of five, like South Florida, UAB, Central Florida, Fresno State, Cincinnati. These teams, we're all competing. So it's really good to see this level of competition all across the board in college football. And I like our level of participation in it and having played such a tough schedule. Now, it doesn't always bode well in terms of our record, and sometimes I think we can take a page out of Alabama's playbook and maybe play a lesser, just one lesser team, you know, just to kind of get our feet wet.
Mm-hmm.
I like what this says for the team going forward. So I'm very encouraged by that.
There you go. Well, so ending our podcast on a positive note for both of us. Remember, coming up this Saturday, UCLA goes over to Arizona State, 11 a.m. on the Pac-12 Network. So again, look for your online streaming services like Sling TV to try to watch that game. Again, USC fans, important game for us. We need UCLA to beat ASU. Hopefully it happens. We'll see. And then, of course, Cal goes against SC 7:30 p.m. at the Coliseum, ESPN. A must-win game, probably going to be a nail-biter. Very much a game that nobody on the East Coast is even going to bother watching because it's so late at the night. But regardless, either way, we will be back next weekend for reviews of those games. And then, of course, it is the game that we wait for all season long, what the name of our podcast is named after, the SoCal Showdown, USC taking on UCLA. We're going to be going in depth with everything about that game, all the things that you need to know. Of course, a lot of trash talking between the two of us. We'll figure out where we stand on that game. So definitely probably won't be ending as touching friendly and high-spirited as this podcast has ended. But it'll definitely be one to listen to. So, once again, for my co-host Anthony Fletcher, I am Joshua Shibata. Thank you very much for listening to the SoCal Showdown podcast. Have yourself a great day and a great night.